Daniel chapter 7 is about the Ancient of Days. Daniel chapter 7 is about the Ancient of Days. As all the other chapters that we've studied so far in Daniel, this chapter is about who God is and what he is doing. And the main name for God in Daniel chapter 7 is the Ancient of Days. You'll notice that we've sung that phrase already this morning in our opening hymn. This name appears in verse 9, verse 13, and verse 22. And this is the only place in the whole Bible where that particular name for God shows up. And when something only shows up once, you pay attention to see why is it there. The Ancient of Days. The one who is from all eternity. The eternal God, which is mind-blowing, right? Just thinking about the concept of eternity, you know, forever and ever and ever, always was, always is, always will be. That's a mind blower. And this is a person who is eternal, a person who is the Ancient of Days. Keep your eyes on the Ancient of Days. That's important to keep in mind as we read Daniel chapter 7, because even though it's kind of obvious, it's also kind of easy to miss, because we can so easily begin to focus on the other wild and wonderful things that also show up in Daniel chapter 7. I mean, did you listen when Keegan read? Were you going, what? Huh? It's so easy to focus on the other things in Daniel chapter 7. As with the rest of this book, the point of Daniel 7 is not Daniel, the wise man. He is in Daniel chapter 7. Daniel's actually the one human character that carries through the last half of this book, the four big visions of Daniel. But Daniel the wise man would be the first to say that Daniel 7 is not about Daniel the wise man. He's wise that way. And it's also not about these beasts. They're there, and they are terrifying, but they are not the point. And correctly identifying who these beasts are in real life is also not the point. As interesting and edifying as it may be to try to piece it all together, the fantastic beasts of Daniel 7 are not the point of Daniel 7. And neither is the identity of the little horn in verse 8 and verse 11 and verses 20 through 26. I'll tell you what I think that is, but whatever it is, it is not the point of Daniel 7. What is the point of Daniel 7? The Ancient of Days. Keep your eyes on the Ancient of Days. And, yes, there is one other character that Daniel 7 is all about. And that's especially true because of his special relationship with the Ancient of Days. We will see that in due course. Keep your eyes on the Ancient of Days as we study Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7 tells the story of a horrific and hope-filled dream that Daniel had. We've read about a bunch of dreams so far in the book of Daniel, but they were all the dreams of a king. But now it's Daniel's turn to dream. Let's look together at verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream. And visions passed through his mind as he was lying on his bed. He wrote down the substance of his dream. Now, we've reached the second half of the book of Daniel, and it's going to be very different in some ways from the first half. The first half, the first six chapters, there's 12, the first six chapters were full of stories, especially stories about kings and their courts, right? Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar and Darius. Now the second half, the last six chapters, are going to be full of prophetic visions, Four major revelatory visions all seen by Daniel the wise man. Chapter 7, chapter 8, chapter 9, and then chapters 10 through 12 contain the four visions. These chapters have a different vibe, a different feel to them. If you thought the first six chapters were wild, hold on to your seats, okay? And yet, this is not a different book. This is the same book. It has the same author. It has the same themes. It has the same message, the King of Kingdoms. And it has the same two languages. Remember how we said that Daniel was written in two cousin languages, right? Hebrew and what? Aramaic, right? Which was the international language of the day. We said there are six chapters written in Hebrew and six chapters in Aramaic. What language is chapter 7 written in? Anybody know? Anybody looking at your footnotes and we're thinking ahead? It's in Aramaic. Chapter 1 was in Hebrew. Chapters 2 through 7 are in Aramaic. And one of the things that does is show us that this is all one book, right? The Aramaic goes over into the second half of the book, tying it together. Chapter 7 is the hinge chapter that this whole book turns on. Of course, there were also visions in the first half. Chapter 7 is a lot like chapter 2. We will see how the dream of Daniel in chapter 7 reminds us a lot of the dream of Nebuchadnezzar back in chapter 2. Now, when was this dream? Verse 1 says that it was in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Okay, put on your thinking caps. Chapter 7 then must be a flashback, right? It takes place before which chapters that we've already read? Is it before chapter 6? Yes, that was King Darius the Mede, right? Belshazzar is before that. Is it before chapter 5? Yes, because that was King Belshazzar's last day as king. His feast was, with the writing on the wall, on the day he died in October of 539 BC. Daniel had this dream before chapter 5, after chapter 4, and before chapter 5, probably about 14 years before chapter 5. The first year of King Belshazzar was probably 553 BC. Daniel was, how old was Daniel in 553 BC? Some of you guys are all math wizards, right? You've already figured it out. What is it? Okay, he was 80 in chapter 6, or around 80, okay? This is about 15 years before, so he's 65, 66, 67, somewhere in there. Kind of middle-aged Daniel, right? Perhaps retired for his first time, trying to live a quiet life, praying three times a day and living for the glory of God and the good of his people. This was kind of that time period where he was forgotten, perhaps, not in charge of anything. And one night, between chapters 4 and 5, Daniel had a dream. And it was a doozy. This dream shook Daniel to his core. And it was clearly from God. I don't know exactly how he knew, but he knew that this dream was a revelation. And so he wrote it down. Look at verse 2. Daniel said, "In my vision at night I looked, and there before me were the four winds of heaven churning up the great sea. Four great beasts, each different from the others, came up out of the sea." Now, this part of the dream was like a nightmare. Daniel is by the sea, perhaps the Mediterranean. Maybe he remembers the Mediterranean from when he was a boy. He's far from it now in Babylon. And there's this giant storm on the sea. The four wild winds of heaven, north, south, east, and west, from every corner of the earth are churning up the waters. Waves are crashing everywhere. Now, we've learned before, to the Hebrews, the sea was a symbol of chaos. There are no great stories of the Hebrew mariners, right? Jonah is the one who goes to sea, and look at the storm that he experiences, right? The storm is a symbol of chaos. It's uncontrollable and often felt to be a picture of human evil seemingly out of hand. You set out into that sea and you will never return. And then up out of that sea, out of that cauldron of chaos, arises four beasts, four monsters. These four horrific creatures come, one, then another, and then another, up out of the swirling storm of the sea. And there's no way of capturing how scary this part of the dream was. We have our CGI and our special effects. We have Photoshop. But everything we would make with those things is tame compared to this. We cannot depict how terrifying and fearsome and nightmarish this was for Daniel. It's like a horror movie. Some of you like horror movies, okay? This is like a horror movie without the parts you like. Daniel knows that it all means something. Here's the first beast. Look at verse 4. The first was like a lion, and it had the wings of an eagle. I watched until its wings were torn off, and it was lifted from the ground so that it stood on 2 feet like a man, and the heart of a man was given to it. What? This is like a hybrid creature. Some of you like anime, right? It's one of those animals. It's one of these animals and another one kind of put together. So picture a lion, like Daniel is going to be thrown into in the night of, in chapter 6. But this lion has wings, like an eagle. And then the wings are torn off. And then the lion is standing on 2 feet, like a human, and it gets a human heart, like a mind. What is that? And then he just goes on to the next beast. Verse 5. And there before me was a second beast, which looked like a bear. It was raised up on one of its sides, and it had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told, get up and eat your fill of flesh. Notice that these are not a lion and a bear. They're like a lion and like a bear. And this one is kind of laying on its side, and it's just eaten another creature. This rib just hanging out of its mouth, right? And it's just, it's wiping its mouth and it's going back to the buffet for more. It's so hungry. It has this appetite to devour. And then the dream just moves on to the third beast. Verse 6. After that I looked, and there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard. And on its back it had 4 wings, not 2, 4 wings, like those of a bird. This beast had 4 heads, and it was given authority to rule. Some of you are like, I need another extra hour of sleep to take in this sermon today. What? 4 wings and 4 heads on a creature that looks like a leopard? And somebody's giving that authority to rule? Is that what you want ruling over you? A voracious leopard with 4 heads, you cannot escape from that, right? It's not just that the head is on swivel. He's got 4 heads. You cannot get away from this beast. It can reach you in seconds. It has 4 wings. And that's nothing. Wait until you read about the fourth beast. Verse 7. After that, in my vision at night, I looked. He's always looking. You notice that? I looked. He's looking, looking, looking. And there before me was a fourth beast, terrifying and frightening and very powerful. It had large iron teeth. teeth, it crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from all the former beasts, and it had 10 horns. Are you scared yet? You're supposed to be. Daniel was. Now he knows this is all symbolism, okay? This is not saying that there will be these kind of creatures arising from the sea, like Godzilla, right? Or something like that. That's not what he's saying. But he knows that all these symbols mean something. And what they mean is truly terrifying. What kind of animal is this fourth beast like? That's a trick question. I'm glad you looked down at your Bible to see. It's not like anything. He can't come up with an animal to liken this beast to. He has to go with adjectives. He says terrifying and frightening and very powerful. All he can say about this beast is that it had teeth that were metal. They were made of iron. What kind of a beast has iron teeth? What he says is this one is different. It is the apex predator of apex predators. It's in a class by itself. It's completely hideous and cruel and violent and ravenous. Look what it does. It crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. Devastation wherever it goes. He says it has 10 horns. Now, horns in the Bible are a symbol of strength, right? We see, we call antlers on the buck the horns, right? That's the strength. Yeah. Right? This one has 10 horns. That's multiplied strength. This is one supercharged, ultra-powerful beast. I think that's one of the reasons why Daniel was so peaceful in chapter 6, was because he had lived through this dream, which was far scarier than being thrown to the lions. Daniel sees one more scary thing. It's an 11th horn. You thought the first 10 were bad? But look at number 11, verse 8. While I was thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn, a little one which came up among them, and three of the first horns were uprooted before it. This horn had eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth that spoke boastfully. I don't know how about to talk about this. There's this terrible super beast with 10 horns, and then one horn pops up among the other horns and pushes three of the other horns out of its way, and this other horn, it's like growing, right? And it has eyes on it, on the horn, and it's got a mouth, and the eyes are like the eyes of a man. Is that intelligence or greediness? And the mouth is speaking boastfully, spouting off all these kinds of things. Arrogantly, probably blasphemy. It's full of lies. No wonder Daniel is disturbed. This is much scarier than Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2. But this chapter is not about the beasts. This chapter is about what, church? The Ancient of Days. In verse 9, everything changes. Okay? You don't wipe away what you've seen, but all of a sudden, it almost doesn't matter. Look at verse 9. As I looked, there he's looking again. As I looked, thrones were set in place. And the Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, and its wheels were all ablaze. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The court was seated, and the books were opened. Keep your eyes on the Ancient of Days. I have 3 points this morning to try to summarize this chapter. And here's the first one. The Ancient of Days was, is, and always will be God enthroned over all. Daniel has seen these terrible beasts in this terrible storm, but then he sees this throne room with the Ancient of Days seated on the throne. It emphasizes that he's seated. Did you see that? It says it in verse 9. He says it again in verse 10. He took his seat. This is a picture of ultimate authority. Eternal ultimate authority. This person is the judge. How does he feel about these animals, these beasts? He's unbothered by them. He's unbothered by the monsters. He's just sitting there. He's not like, ooh, oh no, look at these scary creatures. Like, he's not standing up on the throne, clutching his robes, like, ooh, ooh. No. He's seated. He's not threatened in the slightest. In fact, he's the most threatening person in this story. He's so perfect. He's so pure. He's so peaceful. Right? You see it in verse 9. His clothing was white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. White here is pure. But by the way, this is not saying that God actually looks like this. Right? This is a dream. This is a vision. These are symbols. This is apocalyptic imagery. God lives in unapproachable light, like we sang in our first hymn today. This is not describing God. We can't look at God. Right? But this is a description. It's telling us who God is, not what God looks like, by telling us what God looks like in this dream. Does that make sense? He's pure. He's so pure that he is holy, holy, holy. His throne is flaming with fire. You see a throne in your head, right? This one's on fire. It's not burning him up. It comes from him. And it's got wheels. This throne, it's got wheels. It's like a chariot. Like the throne in Ezekiel chapter 1 with the wheels and the wheels, right? And these wheels are on fire. You think you're fast, little animal with your four wings? Try going up against a wheeling chariot of fire. And there is fire that comes out from him. Like a river of fire? Like lava flowing from him? I don't know. It just means he's holy. It just means he's so holy that when there's sin, he's full of wrath. If he punishes sin, there's fury. There's fire. You thought the fiery furnace was something? He's got fire coming out of his throne. And the whiteness of his hair, that probably doesn't just symbolize purity, but age. He's the Ancient of Days. He's forever old. And he's forever wise. The whiteness of his hair probably illustrates his wisdom as well. Nothing escapes him. He always knows what to do. He always knows what is right. He's furious against evil. And he's always been this way. And he always will be. You get the picture? Like, long before anything, he was like this. And after everything, he'll still be like this. He's the Ancient of Days. And he is seated on his throne. He's surrounded by angels or saints. We're not sure who these attendants are. Probably angels. Verse 10, thousands upon thousands attended him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. I don't think that just means there was 100,000. I think it means an uncountable number. There's angels everywhere. And every one of their eyes is on him. Every eye seeing what he says. Every ear is hanging on his every word. He is glorious. He is majestic. And he always has been. And he always will be. In verse 2 and verse 8, verses 2 through 8, I envision all kinds of terrible sounds to go with the terrible beasts, the storm, the eating of flesh, the trampling of people, the screams. But then when I get to verse 9, it's like, hit the mute button, all of that goes away, and there's just eternal calm, eternal stillness. Eternal purity, eternal justice. The only sounds are the crackling of his holy fire and the opening of the books. Now, these books are probably the records of the deeds of human beings, and the Ancient of Days is the judge. He was, is, and always will be God, enthroned over all. Amen. This is good news, brothers and sisters. Because it means that this world that we're living in is not out of control. It may feel that way. It might feel like the chaotic sea. And there are terrible things unleashed in this world. There are beasts. Our world can be monstrous. Human kingdoms can be terrifying and frightening and very powerful, crushing and devouring and trampling the kingdoms of man. But there is and always has been and always will be an eternal God enthroned above all. Tomorrow, a bunch of us are going to Stay Sharp, our district theology conference. And this year, the theme is true spiritual warfare. So we'll be talking about Satan and demons and prayer and all of that. And sometimes we can get to thinking that our world is a battle between our holy God and the unholy Satan. I've seen on Facebook, right? There's kind of a God kind of fighting Satan, and maybe they're arm wrestling, right? Kind of a yin and yang. One of them gets the upper hand, and then the upper hand goes to the other one for a while. That's not how it is. Not at all. God is God, and Satan is just a wannabe. They're not anywhere close to equal. Now, Satan is powerful compared to us. He's terrible and terrifying, and so are all of his minions, including the humans who band together into empires to rule over us and persecute God's people. They are truly powerful and scary, but not to God. Not to the Ancient of Days. He was, is, and always will be enthroned over all. And he's going to do something about all this evil. He's going to judge it. That's the point of verse 11. Then I, Daniel, continued to watch because of the boastful words the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and its body destroyed and thrown into the blazing fire. The other beasts had been stripped of their authority but were allowed to live for a period of time. See how Daniel keeps looking? Looking into his visionary dream. It's kind of like a split screen, right? Like up here's the Ancient of Days, peaceful and powerful, holy, majestic, wise, pure, just. And down here on this screen is that 11th horn on the terrible fourth beast still mouthing off. Maybe on mute, maybe turn it on, you hear him again, you put him on mute, then you hear him again. And then the Ancient of Days steps into the lower screen and judges the beast so that it dies and it's thrown into the fire that was coming out of his throne. The beast is dead. Totally dead. Burnt to a crisp and gone. Suddenly, supernaturally, spectacularly. And it's final. The other beasts, the first three, had already lost their authority but had been allowed to hang around in some way, perhaps after they were devoured up in part of the fourth beast. But this is final. This is decisive. The Ancient of Days wins. And then he turns around and he gives away his kingdom. And that's, if I can say it, this is even more wild than anything we've seen so far. Look at verse 13. In my vision at night, I looked. So here's dream part three. Part one's the horror movie, right? Part two is the Ancient of Days. Now here's part three. I guess maybe part three was the destruction of the beast, okay? The fourth beast. Maybe this is part four, okay? However you want to count it. Look here. And there before me was one like a son of man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days. Is he burnt up in the fire? No. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. Now, say it with me now, everybody. Say it with me, church. Daniel 7:14. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All peoples, nations, and men of every language worshiped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. This person that approaches the Ancient of Days is the furthest thing from a beast there ever was. He's not like an animal, right? He's like a son of man. That means he seems human. But he also seems heavenly, right? He rides on the clouds. Nobody rides on the clouds but God. So he seems human and he seems divine at the same time. And he's allowed into the presence of the Ancient of Days and he's welcome there. He doesn't cower. He's not afraid. It's not like, okay, I'm gonna get close to the Ancient of Days. He gets on a cloud and he flows right on up to the eternal throne. And the Ancient of Days confers on him a kingdom. The kingdom. The kingdom unlike any other kingdom. This right here is the part of the book of Daniel that is quoted the most in the New Testament, and you can guess why. Because I think we now, on this side of the cross, have a pretty good idea who this one like a son of man really is. What's his name? Yeah. But for Daniel, this is all new. He's heard some of these things like this before. There's a lot of similarities between Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2 and Daniel's dream here in chapter 7, but there's also a lot of new things, like this son of man. I suppose he's kind of like that rock that was cut out of the mountain and went and smashed the statue. But here he's a person. There's a lot of new things in this vision of Daniel, and they were troubling to him. Look at verse 15. I, Daniel, was troubled in spirit, and the visions that passed through my mind disturbed me. He's saying, what does it all mean? Ironically, Daniel could interpret the dreams of pagan kings, but this one, he didn't understand on his own. So he asks someone in his dream what it means. Probably an angel. Look at verse 16. I approached one of those standing there and asked him the true meaning of all this. So he told me and gave me the interpretation of these things. The four great beasts are four kingdoms that will rise from the earth. But the saints of the Most High will receive the kingdom and will possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. So that's the meaning of Daniel's dream. Those two verses, it capture the true meaning in just a few short words. The four beasts are not monsters who are going to be unleashed on the earth, Godzilla-like. They are four kingdoms. Four kingdoms. Now, what does that remind you of? Nebuchadnezzar's dream of the statue, right? Remember there were four parts to the statue with four different metals, right? Head of gold, chest of silver, belly of bronze, legs of iron, and 10 toes of iron and clay. Do you remember that? I know it's been a couple months. We learned back in January that they were all kings and kingdoms. And who was the head of gold? Nebuchadnezzar, the king of kings at that time, the kingdom of Babylon. So here we have four beasts that are also four kings and their kingdoms, according to the angel of verse 14. So they might match up kind of like this, perhaps. Beast like a lion, head of gold. Beast like a bear, chest of silver. Beast like a leopard, belly of bronze. Beast unlike all others, legs of iron. Notice the beast has teeth of iron. And 10 horns, 10 toes of iron and clay. So let me ask you, which particular kingdoms in history does it say that these four beasts are? Everybody looks at their Bible, they look back up at me, and they say, that's a trick question, right? It does not say. It does not say which kingdom these four beasts are. And faithful Christians have disagreed about the identification of these kingdoms for over 2,000 years. My guess is that we have several different theories in this room. Some of you are kind of like, you've got like the detective board in a movie up where you've got all these different pieces of paper and red string attached to all the different photos, and you've got in your mind what all this is, right? That's great. It's okay that we have different theories in this room. I'll tell you my best guess in just a second. But it's okay for us to have different ideas about that. What's important is that we agree about verses 17 and 18. The four great beasts are four kingdoms that will rise from the earth. But the saints of the Most High will receive the kingdom and will possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. Here's point number two. The Ancient of Days will destroy all of our enemies. The Ancient of Days will kill all the beasts. The Ancient of Days will slay all the monsters. The Ancient of Days will defeat and destroy all of the evil empires of human history. That's what we need to know. The Bible doesn't tell us everything we want to know, right? That'd be nice sometimes. But the Bible does tell us everything we need to know. And we need to know that there's evil at work in the world. We need to know that our world has a very ugly side to it. We do not live in Candyland. Our world is scary and ferocious, especially to believers in Jesus. In chapter 2, the statue of kingdoms looked imposing, right? But in chapter 7, we see the same kingdoms, perhaps, from God's perspective above, and from the oppressed's perspective below. It's more than imposing. It's terrifying. That's true. We need to know that. Daniel needed to know that. The people of Israel needed to know that. They needed to know what was coming. And they needed to know that it would not go on forever. The four great beasts are four kingdoms that will rise from the earth, but the saints of the Most High will receive the kingdom and will possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. The Ancient of Days will destroy all of our enemies. He will judge them. They will burn up in the fire that comes out of his throne. The beast is slain. The beast is burnt. That, friends, is what's going to happen. So Daniel's like us. He wants to know more. He's trying to wrap his mind around what he's heard, especially that fourth beast, the different one. What's going to happen? Look at verse 19. Then I wanted to know the true meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others and most terrifying, with its iron teeth and bronze claws. Ooh, that's a new detail, isn't it? Bronze claws. The beast that crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. I also wanted to know about the 10 horns on its head and about the other horn that came up before which 3 of them fell, the horn that looked more imposing than the others and that had eyes and a mouth that spoke boastfully. As I watched, this horn was waging war against the saints and defeating them. Defeating them? Until the Ancient of Days came and pronounced judgment in favor of the saints of the Most High. And the time came when they possessed the kingdom. Daniel says, ooh, tell me more about that. The angel, he gave me this explanation. The fourth beast is a fourth kingdom that will appear on earth. It'll be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth, trampling it down and crushing it. The 10 horns are 10 kings who will come from this kingdom. After them, another king will arise, different from the earlier ones. He will subdue 3 kings. He will speak against the Most High and oppress his saints and try to change the set times and the laws. The saints will be handed over to him for a time, times, and half a time. But the court will sit, and his power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. So here the interpreter has told Daniel a few more things, a few more details. But notice that he still does not name names. He still does not tell us what is what and who is who, like we want him to. And his basic point is that things get really bad, and then the Ancient of Days fixes it all. Remember, he is the point of it all. Keep your eyes on the Ancient of Days. So, here's what I think. And I could be wrong. I've changed my mind on this over the years, and I've studied all kinds of views this week once again. There are good arguments all around. I tend to think that that first beast is Babylon. I mean, it feels pretty parallel with the head of gold, and that's the only kingdom that has been identified in the book so far. Look again at verse 4. The first was like a lion. Lions were the chief animal to represent Babylon. There were 120 lions in bold relief just past that Ishtar gate that Jeff put on our graphic design. And Babylon conquered the world swiftly. Perhaps that's what the wings mean. But then they got their wings clipped. Was that Nebuchadnezzar's madness that we read about in chapter 4? If so, then it had already happened by the time Daniel's having this dream. And it would make sense that the heart of a man being given to it was Nebuchadnezzar humbling himself and becoming sane again. Not quite sure, but that makes some sense. I tend to think then that the second beast is the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. I mean, that was the next kingdom to come, right? The fact that in verse 5 the bear is kind of lopsided might point to the Persians growing to be the bigger part of the double kingdom. Not sure. They definitely were hungry for conquest, though. They ate up the kingdoms of Lydia, Babylon, and Egypt. Perhaps those are the 3 ribs in the beast bear's mouth. So what would that make the third beast be? The next major world power after the Medes and the Persians. Who was that? Greece, right. Alexander the Great, right? He's great because he conquered so fast. In 10 years, from being like age 22 to age 33, Alexander conquered the whole known world of his day. Supposedly he cried when he was 32 or 33 because there were no more kingdoms to conquer. Maybe that's why the leopard beast has 4 wings. And the 4 heads? Maybe because his kingdom was divided up into 4 kings when he died. We'll talk more about that next week in chapter 8 and later in chapter 11 when it becomes important there. So what would make then that the fourth beast? Well, it would make sense to say Rome, because it'll be the Roman Empire that conquers the Greek Empire and then lasts for hundreds of years. terrifying and frightening and very powerful. But this kingdom, Daniel keeps saying, is different, right? He keeps saying it's different. And so it probably is Rome, but I think it's more than Rome. It's like Rome plus, or Rome plus all the other kingdoms of the world that come after it. Or if it's Rome, then it's also Rome again. Rome on steroids at the end of history. There's a real argument to be made that just like the statue of chapter 2 is all of human kingdoms in one statue, this is all of human empires in four beasts, with the fourth beast eating up all the rest and being the worst, eventually the worst kingdom there ever will be. So this little mouth, this little big mouth horn of verse 8, there have been many guesses about who that is. One of the most popular is a terrible king in the Greek kingdom called Antiochus IV Epiphanes. Have you heard of him? We're going to learn more about him in the next month or so as well. He was evil and awful. And even if Antiochus IV Epiphanes isn't the little big mouth horn, he definitely was a precursor to the little big mouth horn, a foretaste about how bad it could get. But there have been many other guesses. I could go on and on if this was a lecture and not a sermon. I think what's most likely is that this is the person that John the Elder called the Antichrist in 1 John. I think that's the same person that the Apostle Paul calls the man of lawlessness in 2 Thessalonians 2. And I think it's the same person that John the Revelator simply calls the beast in the book of Revelation. And he is either in the world now or still on the way. We don't know. Verse 21 says that he wages war against the saints and is defeating them. He's persecuting followers of Jesus, making their lives a living hell, like what was planned for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in chapter 3 and for Daniel in the lion's den of chapter 6. Iron teeth and bronze claws, crushing, devouring, trampling. He's powerful and terrifying and imposing and formidable. And he's also toast. Verse 22. Until the Ancient of Days came and pronounced judgment in favor of the saints of the Most High, and the time came when they possessed the kingdom. This dream is not about the little big mouth horn. It's about the Ancient of Days. If you can't see that, keep looking. Keep looking. Just like Daniel, keep looking. Keep looking. Keep your eyes on the Ancient of Days. I know it feels sometimes like there are too many kings with too much power over us. Some Christians in this world are at the mercy of kings with no mercy. John just told us about these Christians in Syria who are being persecuted. It's going to get worse. But at the same time, we have nothing to worry about. Because the Ancient of Days will destroy all of our enemies, including the worst ones ever. Everything is going to be made right. And it will be sooner than it seems. In verse 25, after it gives some more detail about the 10 horns, is that like the 10 toes from chapter 2? The 10 kings and the 3 kings that are tossed out for the one worst king. It says this, the saints will be handed over to him for a time, times, and half a time. Now there's all kinds of theories about that one too. It could simply just mean 3.5 years. A year, 2 years, half a year. Which could be the second half of a 7-year tribulation period, if that's your take on it. It's also 1,260 days and 42 months, which show up again in the book of Revelation. And not coincidentally, I think it's the same period of time that the Jews pushed back against Antiochus IV Epiphanes in the 2nd century BC. But what I keep coming back to in these words is how it seems like they get cut short. A time of persecution and trouble? Oh, what a time. Seems like forever. Times, like double that, two times. Like, it feels as though this will never, ever end. And then just like that, half a time. All of a sudden, it's over, like it was cut short. Now, I don't know if that's right. I'm not certain about a lot of these details. But I am certain that one day we will be able to look back and see with crystal clarity, oh, that's what he meant. And I'm also sure about this. The Ancient of Days will destroy all of our enemies, including the worst ones ever. Verse 26, but the court will sit, and the last king's power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. And then in church, we get the kingdom. Look at verse 27. Then the sovereignty, power, and greatness of the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be handed over to the saints, the people of the Most High. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all rulers will worship and obey him. This is the end of the matter. I, Daniel, was deeply troubled by my thoughts, and my face turned pale, but I kept the matter to myself. I'm glad Daniel wrote it down for later, so we could study it today. I'm sure he was really disturbed by this dream. I'm sure that Daniel wanted to hear that after Babylon, the people of God were going to go back to the promised land and live there securely. Daniel did not want to hear that they were going to be kicked around and oppressed by at least three more terrible kingdoms. But I'm also sure that Daniel was deeply reassured that God had a plan for his people. And that was to give them the kingdom of all kingdoms through the King of all kings, which is point number three and last. The Ancient of Days will give the kingdom of kingdoms to the King of kings. Wait, which is it? Verse 22 and verse 27 said that the kingdom would be handed over to the saints, the people of the Most High. But verse 14 told us that it was going to be given to one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. Which is it? It's both, right? The Son of Man is given the kingdom because he deserves it. He comes into the presence of the Ancient of Days, and he's clearly worthy of the kingdom. He must be, in his person, worthy of this kingdom. And his deeds, his accomplishments, must be worthy of this kingdom, or the Ancient of Days wouldn't just give it to him. And look, if you've got your Bible still open, look at verse 14. It's our memory verse. You have it in your head. After he receives the kingdom, all peoples, nations, and men of every language worshiped him. The cloud rider? They worshiped him? And that was right? They worshiped him? He was worthy of worship? Because he died and rose again. What was Jesus' favorite name for himself? When he went around on the earth and he was teaching, what did he normally call himself? The Son of Man. Yeah, the Son of Man, which meant he was human. But it also meant Daniel 7. Everywhere he went, he was like, Daniel 7. He promised that one day the world will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. He got the kingdom from the Ancient of Days, riding up to him on a cloud. He's enthroned right now with him at his right hand, at the right hand of the Majesty on high. And one day, he will return, coming back on the clouds, bringing us his eternal kingdom, the kingdom of kingdoms, to hand over to us forever and ever. Yes, forever and ever. Keep your eyes on the Ancient of Days. Amen.